Well, then let's get started. Today, we're going to begin the presentation with a brief introduction of the Fulbright Scholar Program and the application. And then I'm going to spend a big chunk of our time discussing points related to specific opportunities that are available in the broad fields of science, technology, engineering, and math for our upcoming 2020-2021 academic year. I hope to answer many of your questions during the course of the webinar. There will be a question and answer period at the end during which you can submit your questions by typing into the questions module on your screen. But as we're going along, if there are any questions and you want me to elaborate, I can see your questions, so please don't be shy. I'll try to get to them as we're going through, but I may save some of your questions for the end. And I'll introduce myself. My name is Caitlin, and I work at the Institute of International Education. I'm based in our San Francisco office, and I am our recruitment lead primarily for the Middle East, North Africa, and Sub-Saharan Africa, but I also work on a couple other special awards like the Global Scholar Award, the Fulbright Public Policy Fellowship, and I also do quite a bit of advising for postdocs and early career applicants. But I am covering the STEM webinar today, so forgive me if I mispronounce any of the science-y words here, but I will do my best. So the Fulbright Program was established in 1946 by Senator J. William Fulbright from Arkansas. Having had his own exchange experience abroad through a Rhodes Scholarship, he was able to see firsthand the value of international and people-to-people exchange for fostering mutual understanding. So using the sale of surplus U.S. government World War II property to initially fund the program, he introduced a bill to Congress, and it was signed into law by President Truman, therefore creating the Fulbright Program. The Fulbright Program is the flagship international exchange program of the U.S. government, and it is designed to increase mutual understanding between people of the U.S. and people of other nations. It is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State, the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, administers it on the side of the State Department, and then the program is administered in close collaboration with the U.S. embassies, Fulbright commissions, and the Institute of International Education, which is the agency that I work for. So we administer the program on behalf of the Department of State and the Fulbright Commissions. Today, the program operates in over 140 countries worldwide, and its alumni include 82 Pulitzer Prize winners, 59 Nobel Prize winners, and multiple MacArthur Genius Grant recipients, lots of other notable individuals. Before I discuss the program, the application in more detail, I want to review some of the basic eligibility requirements for Fulbright U.S. Scholar Awards. So at the time of application, there are several eligibility requirements that must be met. U.S. citizenship is required. Permanent resident status is not sufficient. A PhD or other professional or terminal degree may be required depending on which award you apply to. For professionals and artists, independent scholars, recognized professional standing, and substantial professional accomplishments will be required in lieu of a terminal degree for certain awards. We also require teaching experience at the level and in the field of the proposed lecturing activity as specified in the award description. Some awards will require a more significant amount of teaching experience, others will not. I also want to mention that there are new policies that govern eligibility as it relates to previous Fulbright U.S. Scholar Grants. So if you you previously held a U.S. Scholar Grant within the past 2 years, you'll want to review these policies. There's a two-year waiting period between when you completed your previous Fulbright and when you would be eligible to apply for another Fulbright. If we have any Fulbright alumni on the call that are curious about this requirement, please reach out to the program officer listed in whatever award in the award description of whichever award you're interested in, and we can double check to make sure that you're eligible. So what exactly does the application look like? It's pretty straightforward, and the page limits that I mentioned today are hard limits. So if you go over, you'll be hearing from us to modify your application materials. Please don't make us do that. So just read the directions and try to stay within the page limits if you can. In addition to a standard online form with your personal information through our new application system, which is called Slate, we ask for a 3 to 5 page project statement. Broadly speaking, this document should be addressing what you propose to do, how you propose to do it, why it is important, and what benefits it will produce for your host, your host institution, the host country, yourself, as well as your institution back home. And that impact piece is really important. There's more guidance about the project statement, including prompt questions and samples on our website, CIES.org. I really strongly encourage all of you to spend some time exploring our website because there are some really great resources available for you there. You'll also need to submit a tailored CV of up to 6 pages, including a publications list. 3 letters of reference are required. If you're proposing to do any kind of teaching, one of those reference letters must address your teaching. So it can come from perhaps a department chair or a colleague, someone that's observed you in the classroom or has taken a look at your teaching evaluations. We just need them to touch on your teaching abilities. We have requirements for submissions of references on our website, but I just want to underscore that applicants must register their referees online in the application, and references must be submitted via the online application. You can't submit a reference for someone, and we do not accept mailed-in references. The way that the application system works is you register the names and the email addresses of your referees within the application. You click register, and once you've done that, they'll receive an email with a link to where they can upload their letter of reference for you. It's fairly straightforward. If you're proposing to do teaching, you will also need to submit 2 to 3 sample course descriptions, up to 10 pages total. These syllabi, these course descriptions should be designed by you and be expressive of your philosophy of teaching. And you'll want to indicate whether they have been used previously or have been developed for your application. You can develop new course descriptions. You can use ones that you've done previously. You could do a combination of both. We've seen it both ways, but you'll just want to let us know whether they're new or old. If you're going to be conducting research, we will need to see a 3-page bibliography, which is really more of a lit review without extensive annotations. It should reflect the current state of research on the proposed topic, and it would need to include articles written by scholars other than just yourself. And then depending on the award, there may be some language proficiency required. If you're planning to teach, make sure that you confirm with your host institution what the language of instruction is on that campus. For research projects, language fluency sufficient to complete the research project is required. So for applicants without local language proficiency, feasibility of conducting research must be demonstrated in both the project statement and in the language self-evaluation form. So this means, you know, if you don't speak the local language, note in these application components whether you plan to work with a translator or for many of you, if you're going to be working in a lab, can you feasibly complete the project using English in the lab? Will your collaborators be, you know, speaking English? We just want to make sure that you have considered the, you know, the question of language. Non-native speakers who have local language abilities will be asked to complete a 2-part language proficiency report. And I would recommend for most of you, even if you have only beginner level skills and you don't really think that they're you know, it's not really going to impact your research much, but the first part is the self-evaluation. And I think it's a really simple part of the application to fill out, and it couldn't hurt. I think everyone should fill out the part one self-evaluation, even if you don't need foreign language proficiency to complete your research. And then part two will ask you to register an external evaluator within the application. This part of the report is completed by an appropriate foreign language instructor through the online application reference system in a similar manner to the way that your referees would complete their letters of reference. have a question from one of you that says, how does the project statement differ from the bibliography for research proposals? So they're separate documents. The project statement is something that you are writing about yourself, what your project is, why it's important. And the bibliography is it's a short addition to that. It is not the works cited from your from your project statement. We don't require applicants to do extensive citations in their project statement. The bibliography is really a separate document. And what we want to see is just, for example, if you are going to be doing a project on the migratory patterns of a particular bird, what are some other articles related to that research that, would help to give reviewers a sense of where your project fits within the research that has already been done on that topic or on similar topics. I hope that makes sense. But just to reiterate, the bibliography is not a works cited list from your project statement. It's a completely separate document. Okay. And then let's move on to the letter of invitation. Depending on the award that you apply to, a letter of invitation may be required. I'm going to move to our next slide. The letter of invitation is an expression of interest from a host institution. There are no really specific requirements for such letters, but the letter would need to include what you're being invited to do, the period of time you're being invited for, and a good letter will dive a little deeper and go into a description of the host's interest in your project. This letter should be on official letterhead. And if it is not in English, you'll need to include an English translation along with the original. How do you get a letter? This is one of the most common questions that we get from applicants. If you do not already have contacts in your country of interest, or if contact information is not already listed in the award description, which it often is, we do have some recommendations. First is to look at the resources on your home campus, such as the international office or your colleagues. They may have contacts that they can put you in touch with. You can also take a look at our scholar directory, which you can find when you go to our website, cies.org. On the very front page of our homepage, you can find the list to the scholar directory. The scholar directory lists the names, project titles, countries and host institutions of previous Fulbrighters. Our alumni are very helpful, so if you see someone who has previously gone to the country that you're proposing to go to, or they did a very similar project in a country and you want to just talk to them a little bit about how they sought out their host, you can reach out to them to ask them for an introduction to their contacts or for any other kind of advice. 9 times out of 10, they're going to be very happy to help you out because they have been in your position before. And then also, Google is your best friend. Look at the university websites in the host country, and you can oftentimes locate contact information for different departments very easily on their websites. More often than not, you can find contact information with just a couple of keystrokes. At IIE, we do not keep the names or contact information of people at specific host institutions. So this part will require some hard work and ingenuity on your part. Okay, I have a question about, and I apologize, I skipped over the supplemental materials, given that this was a STEM presentation, but there are supplemental materials required for applicants in the fine arts, writing, journalism, architecture. These really do take the form of a sort of short online portfolio where you would upload, for example, a photographer would upload up to 10 images, a writer would upload a writing sample of a certain size, a filmmaker would upload some video clips of a certain size, and all of the requirements for that are all listed on our website. These supplemental materials are not intended for applicants outside of these specific fields. There's a more extensive list of fields on our website. But for example, if you are a physicist, we would not want you to use the supplemental materials section to upload some, additional photos for your project or additional letters of reference. That's not what that part is intended for. It's really intended for people in the fine arts to upload their portfolios. Okay. Lots of good questions here, and I'm going to answer some of these in slides that are coming up. One that I'm seeing here is, will this recording be shared with participants after today? So yes, I am recording right now, and we will try to upload it. Usually we try to get it up within 5 business days of the webinar. So yes, it will be available to you. Okay, I am going to keep moving so that we can get to more of your questions at the end. So how do you select the correct award? I encourage you to browse the catalog on your own. I'm going to be discussing award highlights in a few moments to give you some ideas, but our catalog has about 460 different awards in it, and you can narrow these down by region, by country, by discipline, or by keyword. I highly recommend using the keyword function if you're looking for a really specific subspecialization. The disciplines that we have listed are really broad, and they're intended to, cover a lot of different subdisciplines. So if you are a specialist in animal science and you don't see animal science listed as a discipline, do not fear. If you just type in animal science into the keyword search and the advanced search function, that will be a little bit of a better way for you to find your specific specialization. So discipline preferences are typically listed in the award descriptions, but the region, many regions also offer all discipline awards. They're available in many, many different countries, which are open to scholars in any field. That means exactly what it sounds like. If it's an all disciplines award, they're accepting applications in all disciplines, so you would be eligible. When searching through the catalog, we recommend thinking about the relevance of your expertise and project to the host country. This is really key if you want to make it, your application may make it through the first round of peer review, but once the applications are reviewed in country, they are going to be, they're really looking for how is this relevant to them, how will the host country benefit, and, what are you hoping to achieve on the grant? I will get more into the review process in a couple of minutes. I'm also asked all the time about where I think an applicant will be most competitive. And the answer to this is, the award descriptions are written by the host countries. They describe exactly what they're looking for. And scholars will be most successful in countries where their skills match the desired specializations of the host country, but also they will be most successful where they're able to make a strong argument for their project's benefit to the host country. So broadly speaking, this is a competitive application process, and therefore your Fulbright proposal needs to be 3 things. It needs to be clear, it needs to be concise, and it needs to be compelling. My advice on submitting a competitive application is on the screen here. You'll want to address the Fulbright goal of promoting mutual understanding. Use the phrase "promote mutual understanding" somewhere in your application. It will be to your benefit. Keep in mind that the host country plays a role in selecting projects, so make sure that you're speaking to them and discussing why you chose to apply to their country and how your project applies specifically to them. As a Fulbrighter, you are essentially serving as a citizen diplomat, so you should also be discussing your ability to succeed in that role. What are your personal qualifications, your demonstrated flexibility, adaptability, all of these things are important. While grants typically go pretty smoothly, we have seen situations in the past where applicants plan to conduct research at a particular archive, and then when they arrive, it suddenly closes for the summer for construction. So you're going to be put in situations like this. You may be put into situations like this where you're going to face a cultural misunderstanding or run into a snag in your research plan, and we need to know that you're not going to lose your head and run screaming back to the U.S. if that happens. And finally, impact. This part of the application is most often overlooked, which I think is the biggest mistake you could make in your application. You need to talk about the multiplier effect. What will this grant mean for you personally? What is it going to mean for your home institution when you return? What is it going to mean for your teaching and your research when you get back from your Fulbright? And most importantly, the host country and host institution. How are you planning to engage with the host community, help build capacity, mentor faculty, do workshops, guest lecturing, and so on. Make sure that you're really addressing that in your application. So with the review process and timeline, the most important thing to note is the deadline of September 16th. Then there will be a series of U.S.-based reviews where your application is going to be reviewed by your peers, which will be people in the same discipline as you. These will be typically our Fulbright alumni as well. So you'll want to be speaking. I saw a question earlier about stakeholders or who are we writing this to. There are lots of different stakeholders. In the first round of peer review, you're going to be talking to your peers, other academics, scholars within your discipline, so you want to make sure that you sound like you know what you're talking about to them. If you make it through that round of review, you'll be notified usually around December if your application was recommended for further review abroad. If they are, the applications are sent to the country that you are applying to, as well as to the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and then finally the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. So these are very different kinds of stakeholders. In the host country, these may not be academics. They may be American citizens. They may not be. They may be embassy staff. They may be local scholars. Different countries do it differently. Your application is also going to be reviewed by the State Department, so you'll have bureaucrats that are not academics that are going to be reading the applications coming from the perspective of the U.S. government. You also want to make sure that you're not too jargony. You want your research to be accessible to someone outside of your discipline as well, for them to be able to see a clear methodology and particularly the impact piece. If you can talk about why the project is important, if we have a poet reading a physics application, then they need to at least be able to see that it's a well planned out project and that that it is important and that it's going to make an impact. So the time frame for final selection notifications is made on a rolling basis, and it ranges really widely from country to country and from year to year. Generally, we try to have applicants notified by April. It may be earlier than that, though. And then after that, you get your grant packets. There's, for certain countries, there's a pre-departure orientation. Then you'd be going out on your grant in the academic year 2020-2021. Okay, I want to just review your questions. So I think I'm seeing a couple of questions from foreign scholars that are, if you're not a U.S. citizen, can I apply? Unfortunately, no. If you're not a U.S. citizen, you are not eligible for this grant. Okay. Okay, I'm going to keep moving and I'm going to save some of these questions for after I go through some of the award highlights. I think some of this will become more clear once I do this. Okay. So for regional highlights, I'm going to go through each of our broad regions and talk about a couple of awards that may be of interest. In the Western Hemisphere, so the Western Hemisphere includes North America, Canada, Mexico, South America, Central America, and the Caribbean. In Mexico, there is a Science and Technology Award. This is an exciting opportunity to conduct research, lecture, or do a combination of both in any STEM field for 1 to 2 semesters in Mexico. Intermediate Spanish is required, though the language proficiency level will depend on the requirements of your proposed project. A letter of invitation is strongly preferred but not required, and the Fulbright Commission in Mexico, COMEXIS, can assist you with connecting to a university, institution, or research center. In addition, this award is open to academics as well as qualified professionals outside of academia as long as you have a terminal degree. In Colombia, there is the Distinguished Chair Award in Biodiversity and Sustainable Development. This important award is an opportunity to spend 4 to 6 months at the largest university in Colombia, one of the world's mega diverse countries, where you would be able to conduct research and or teach in relevant fields relating to biodiversity and sustainable development. And then in Chile, we have a Science and Technology and Astronomy and Antarctic Studies Awards, two different awards. I listed the Science and Technology Award on the screen here. They offer these exciting opportunities to conduct research and teaching in STEM fields like astronomy, data sciences, oceanography, and physics, just to name a few. And then while working knowledge of Spanish is helpful, it is not a requirement. And the Fulbright Commission in Chile can help connect you with potential partner institutions as a letter of invitation is required. In Europe, we have a Cancer Research UK Scholar Award. And this unique award offers an opportunity from 3 to 12 months to conduct research in early detection of cancer, brain cancers, pancreatic cancer, lung cancer, and esophageal cancer. Scholars can affiliate with any research center in the UK, and the award is managed by the Cancer Research UK, the world's largest leading charity dedicated to cancer research and the largest independent funder of cancer research in Europe. In Austria, we have an award in Burgenland. It's an exciting opportunity for a combination of teaching and research in engineering, environmental sciences, and many other fields. In Pinkafjord, which is located in the southwest of the province, which is only about 100 kilometers south of Vienna. The area is in the heart of the Spa region of Burgenland, and a region characterized by gently rolling hills and the foothills of mountains. It's a very beautiful place to do a Fulbright. Sustainability is the overriding focus of the research activities of the Department of Energy and Environmental Management. And a letter of invitation is optional, and they do also welcome early career applicants for this award. In Spain, we offer an opportunity to teach undergraduate level biomechanics and sports biomechanics courses at the School of Sports Science at Universidad Europa de Madrid. This scholar is welcome to join any of the university's research groups and will be invited to present on his or her research and seminars and attend research seminars led by professors at the university. This position is strongly associated with research, including gaining external funding and producing high quality outputs. A letter of invitation is optional, but we do provide contacts at the university for applicants who want to discuss details with their host. Okay. In South and Central Asia, India's Fulbright Kalam Climate Fellowship is a new award opportunity for U.S. scholars. The fellowship strives to build long-term capacity to address climate change-related issues by engaging in scientific and technological research for scholars that are from India and the U.S. You would be conducting research or teaching or a combination of both about climate-related issues And these grants would be beginning anytime after July 1st of 2020. They're 4 to 9 months, and there's also a flex option available. The flex option I haven't touched on yet, but the flex option is a new innovation within the Fulbright program, which would allow you to, instead of going on one long grant, one 8-month grant or 9-month grant, for certain awards, not every award, but some awards do offer a flex opportunity where you would be able to split your grant up into multiple shorter segments where you would be able to go on, you know, 2 to 3 different trips to the country instead of just going on one longer grant. And all of the parameters around that are listed in the award descriptions. Different countries do it a little bit differently, so I don't want to generalize too much, but it is available in some countries. If you're interested in shorter-term opportunities, if you're not able to get away from your institution for more than 1 or 2 months, I would recommend going into the catalog and searching under grant length. You can search by flex options, and that'll pull up the list of countries which offer the flex option. And then in Nepal, Nepal is very interested in applicants from the sciences, especially geology and environmental sciences, given its terrain and natural resources. And the All Disciplines Award to Nepal is for 6 months, and the flex option is also available for this award. If you choose the flex option, grants would last 4 to 5 months, and you would complete that over multiple segments. A letter of invitation is required for Nepal. And then Kazakhstan recently announced its efforts to make English its third official language. So this would be a great time for Fulbrighters to come and make an impact there. There are 5 grants available to research and or teach 1 or 2 courses at the undergraduate and graduate level. If pursuing a combination award, the ratio of teaching to research would be 50-50. That's for this particular award. That's another really common question. If I want to do both, what's the balance? Unless it's otherwise listed in the award description, that balance is up to you and your host institution to determine in the discussions that you have prior to you coming on the grant. But for this particular award, they are asking for a 50-50 split of teaching to research. The flex option is available for research grants to the award to Kazakhstan. And then in East Asia and the Pacific, all of the awards I'm going to highlight in this region are in Australia. For the Fulbright Distinguished Chair in Science, Technology, and Innovation, scholars will conduct research at Curtin University in Perth, which will be focused on the importance to the bilateral relationship between Australia and the United States in the areas of resources and energy. Scholars are encouraged to collaborate with the host institution on workshops and short seminars in addition to the research that they would be conducting. And then grants would be 3 to 4 months beginning in January or February in line with the Australian academic year. A letter of invitation is required for that award. The Distinguished Chair in Advanced Science and Technology Award is seeking senior academics at the level of associate or full professor with a distinguished career. Applicants are invited to work on a specific project on the future of defense technology research. The DST group, or partner research institution, for the relevant research program can serve as a host. So these include organizations like the Australian Nuclear Science and Technology Organization, as well as many of Australia's majoring universities. So interested applicants should email the DST group contact person that's listed in the award description to discuss projects and to obtain the required letter of invitation. And then we have the Fulbright Distinguished Chair in Multiple Disciplines at the University of Newcastle. For this award, senior academics will undertake research of importance to the University of Newcastle, which is an established research leader in health and medicine, engineering, and energy and resources. There are about 20 specific areas of priority research listed in the award description, including computer-assisted research mathematics, assisted particle processing and transport, geotechnical science and engineering, and numerous health and medicine related areas of specialization. So if you're interested in any of those broader areas, please take a look at this award. There are many disciplines listed. The grant would be 5 or 6 months. And the contact information to discuss project proposals is listed in the award description under award requirements. We need two more regions left to go, and then I will get to all of your questions. So Israel is a top destination for U.S. scholars to conduct teaching and research in STEM activities in STEM fields. For the Israel Postdoctoral Fellowship, the Fulbright Commission in Israel is planning to award up to 8 grants. These are unique and prestigious grants that are open to researchers in all academic disciplines and support them for up to 20 months or 2 academic years. This is for early career scholars. An expression of interest from a host institution is required for the award that typically takes the form of acceptance into the institution's postdoctoral fellowship program. So according to Israeli regulations, a researcher would be defined as a postdoctoral fellow for a period of 5 years, beginning from the date of the award of his or her doctorate. So to be eligible for this award, candidates must have received their PhD degrees no earlier than August of 2015 in order to remain eligible as a postdoctoral researcher for the duration of the fellowship. In addition to postdoctoral fellowships, we also offer a senior scholar fellowship for 4 months to Israel. So if you don't fall into the postdoc category, but you are a more senior scholar, then there's another award to Israel that would be a good fit for you as well. And then in Egypt, we reopened the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program in Egypt last year, and we expect it to remain open for this competition. And there are a broad array of opportunities that exist in Egypt, but the sciences are really a top priority. They are very eager to host you. A special feature of this 3 to 9 month award is an additional $2,000 allowance for specialized materials. A letter of invitation is also optional. The commission is happy to place you somewhere if you don't have connections in the country. And no Arabic language skills are required. Preferred disciplines include, but are not limited to, computer science and information technology, biotechnology, engineering, public health, pharmacy, chemistry, biology, botany, agriculture, bioinformatics, physics, zoology, geology, environmental sciences, nutrition, and energy, and many, many more. And then moving on to Qatar, the 12-month postdoctoral fellowship in water, energy, and the environment at Hamad bin Khalifa University is one of our new awards this year. A postdoctoral research fellowship, this would allow you to work with this institution on water security and research. So it's the Qatar Environment and Energy Research Institute at HBKU in Doha. The scholars' research would focus on aquifer mapping, groundwater mapping, and other water security-related issues for the region. And this grant supports a statement of intent signed by NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory and HBKU. The project would lead to, or may lead, but hopefully will lead to the launch of satellite-borne radar imaging technology that would be used to map underground aquifers in Qatar with really wide applications for understanding climate change on our planet and water traces on arid planets like Mars. To be eligible, candidates must have received their PhD no earlier than 2013, and they would need to have completed their PhD before they depart to begin their postdoctoral research. For the postdoctoral opportunities that I mentioned in the Middle East, we have postdoctoral opportunities available in other countries, other regions as well. If any of you on this call are more senior scholars and you are working with any PhD students that you think would be good fits for a postdoctoral fellowship in Qatar, Israel, or elsewhere in Spain or China, we have many different awards. You can refer them to us, but I would really encourage you to share these opportunities with them, because I think that a lot of PhD students don't realize that there are postdoctoral fellowship opportunities within the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program that they would be eligible for. And then the final region is Sub-Saharan Africa, And we are excited to be sending our first Fulbright U.S. scholar to Sudan for the first time in 20 years. We did that last year. Universities are eager to restart this program and see increased partnerships and cooperation with U.S. experts and universities. Overall, the Sudan offers an opportunity for cutting-edge research in a variety of disciplines and opportunities to increase the institutional capacity of the university systems to deliver quality education. The potential for impact here is huge. Applications are especially encouraged in disciplines such as science and technology, food security, water and resources management, renewable energy, marine sciences, cancer research, primary health care, and nanotechnology. There are other disciplines listed in the award as well. There's also an award hosted by the International Institute for Water and Environmental Engineering in Burkina Faso, which is seeking experts in water and sanitation, engineering, energy, civil engineering, or environmental science. This is a 10-month combination teaching research grant. So for this award, teaching would be in English, though some French language ability would be useful for daily living, but it's not required. And there's already contact information for the host institution listed in the award, which makes your life really easy. So if you're interested in Sub-Saharan Africa, I highly recommend Burkina Faso. And finally, our Applied Sciences Award at the Botswana Institute for Technology, Research, and Innovation. For this award, the applicant is expected to have a biochemistry background with expertise in using mass spectrometry to identify biological molecules associated with different forms of cancer. The grantee would be setting up a molecular biology lab for this project. Alternatively, there are other expertise that they're looking for in heterogeneous catalysis with experience in developing catalytic reactions with syngas to produce fuels. I hope I pronounced all of that correctly. There is contact information for Professor James Darkala in the award description, and he will be able to provide more details and write a letter of invitation for someone that is a good fit. Okay, so now I am going to open the virtual floor to your questions. I already see that many have been streaming in throughout the presentation. So if there are any others, go ahead and type them into the chat box on your screen. If your question is very specific to your situation, please contact me after the webinar to follow up privately. I want to try and keep these questions broadly accessible to everybody. I've also listed a couple of frequently asked questions on the screen. One of which I see is, how many applications do you get? What is the success rate? We do not share our application numbers or success rates per the policy of the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. I will say that I think broadly, if you consider the whole world and all of our awards, we generally say 1 in 3. But that will depend a lot on where you're applying and which particular award and which country. Some countries are more competitive than others, but we do not share success rates or application numbers. Another very common question, can I apply to 2 or more awards in the same competition? Can I apply to the UK and France? No, you can only apply to 1 award per competition. Okay, I'm going to start going through your questions, and I think I answered some of these. Should the project statement and bibliography be written for a general audience or more specific? As I mentioned earlier, there are multiple audiences, so you will want to write for your peers, people within your discipline, but you will also want to be writing for people that are outside of your field and people that are outside of the academy. Okay. How does one get a list of distinguished chair awards in STEM areas? That you would get through our catalog of awards. You can search by category, and through that, you'll be able to find Distinguished Chair Awards or awards that are open to senior scholars. We do not offer Distinguished Chair Awards in every country or even every region. We do not offer, for example, any Distinguished Chair Awards in Sub-Saharan Africa or the Middle East and North Africa, because all of our awards, or most of our awards, are open to scholars at all levels. Just because you are not seeing a Distinguished Chair Award in a particular country doesn't mean that they are not willing to consider your application, particularly if there's an All Disciplines Award to that country. So if you find that you're going through the catalog and you're having trouble finding an award that's an appropriate fit for you, you can always email us at scholars@iie.org and let us know, particularly if you send us a copy of your CV and a brief description of what you would like to do, we can direct your inquiry to, if there's a specific region you're interested in, we'll direct it to the program officer responsible for that region, and we can make recommendations about awards that we think would be a good fit for you. What is the budget requirement? There is no budget requirement. We do not require that you submit a budget. Actually, we don't allow you to submit a budget. And there are a couple of questions about who would be a good letter writer. And I think, that we do have advice on this on our website. If you go to CIES.org within the application tab, you can select letters of recommendation and we give some tips. My tip for letters of recommendation is choose people that are familiar with you and your research rather than just people that are maybe perceived as big names in your field. I think that's a big mistake that some applicants make, is listing someone that they think their name will be impressive, but they may not necessarily know the applicant or their project very well. Because your application is going to be read by people outside of your discipline, and even the people within your discipline may not be within the extremely niche part of your field. So listing, so-and-so who's a big name in your field may not necessarily work or be that impressive to people who don't know who that person is. So I always recommend trying to, choose people that know you really well. I also recommend trying to do a mix of internal and external letters, so just to demonstrate the breadth of your contacts. So someone within your current home institution, maybe someone outside of that institution, try to have a variety of different kinds of institutions listed. And I'll also note that the person that writes your letter of invitation to the host institution cannot also write a letter of recommendation. Okay, just reading through your questions. If you have received a Fulbright before, are you at a disadvantage? So no, not necessarily. So I'd love to know whether you have had a previous Fulbright U.S. Scholar grant, or if you had received a Fulbright student grant, perhaps when you were a PhD student. If you had received a Fulbright as a student, then it will have absolutely no bearing on your, you can talk about your previous Fulbright experience, and I think that would actually be a good thing to talk about, but whether or not you were a Fulbright U.S. student in the past would not really impact your competitiveness. Generally speaking, we are trying to give grants to people that have not had Fulbrights before. So there are additional prompt questions for your project statement and additional review criteria for people that are Fulbright U.S. Scholar alumni. And I think that it really depends on how you frame it and whether you're trying to go back to the same country that you already went to. If you went to, Botswana and you want to go back to Botswana again, that would be a little bit more of a difficult argument. But what you would need to do is make an argument about how you would be building on your previous Fulbright if you were selected for another grant. And you'll also want to underscore the outcomes of your previous grant how did you engage with the host institution before? What research collaborations have come about as a result of your previous Fulbright? Really demonstrate that you really got the full Fulbright experience, and you got everything out of that experience that you could. And I would recommend that if you're a repeat applicant, that you apply to go to a different country, not to go to the same country. You know, particularly, I mean, if you did a Fulbright U.S. Scholar Grant 10 years ago, that's a different story. But if you did one just 2 or 3 years ago, that would be a little bit more difficult, and you'll want to just make sure that you are really addressing the review criteria in on our website, specifically for Fulbright alumni. Okay, just reading through your questions. So a good question, if we are applying for an early career fellowship that requires a PhD, do we need to have the degree before applying or before starting the fellowship? So unless the award states otherwise, we would require that you have your PhD by February of the year that you would be going out on your grant. So if you are going to complete your grant by February of 2020, then you're all good, so you wouldn't need to have your PhD by that time. There are other awards which would only require that you have your PhD by the time you would go out on your grant, and that's true for a lot of our postdoctoral fellowships. For example, in Israel, they just would require that you have your degree by the time you go on your grant. So that question would be sort of specific to which award you apply to. But generally speaking, no, you don't need to have your PhD by the time you apply, but you would need to have it shortly thereafter. If I have a project idea for a country which is not in the award list, does that mean it can't be done? So if the country that you want to go to is not listed in our catalog, then unfortunately you cannot do a Fulbright there. That means that we are not active in those countries for whatever reason. Sometimes it has to do with security. Sometimes just the embassy is not interested in having Fulbright there. It really depends. But if the country is not listed in the catalog of awards, then we don't have an active program there, and thus you cannot do a project there. A couple of questions about, you know, if you have a master's degree, what kind of opportunities are there for you? So that's another thing that in the catalog, what you can do is you can search by degree requirement, and you can look for awards which do not require a PhD. But there are quite a few awards that do not require a PhD in our catalog. You would just need to search in the catalog by a PhD not required. Okay, one question about Europe and smaller principalities like Luxembourg or Monaco. Are these managed independently or through programs in larger neighboring countries? I do not know the answer to that. I would recommend that you reach out to our Europe team at europeeurasia@iie.org. You can find that email address as well in the catalog of awards in any of the countries that fall into Europe or Eurasia, and reach out to them and ask. That's a good question. I do not know. Okay, besides the Distinguished Chair Awards, are there Senior Fellow Awards for someone at the professor level? So yes, in addition to Distinguished Chair Awards, we have some Senior Scholar Awards. If you are having trouble finding those opportunities or an opportunity that's a good fit for you, like I said, you can always reach out to us with your CV and the description of the kind of project that you'd like to undertake, and we can make some recommendations. So there are some questions about the financial aspect of the Fulbright, and that will completely depend on which award you're applying to. So you'll want to go into the award description and navigate over to the award benefits tab. And there you'll be able to find the stipend rates. A sort of range will be listed. That range will sort of depend on what kind of activity you're doing, what your academic rank is, how many dependents you're bringing with you on your grant. But that stipend is intended to cover your housing and your living expenses. We cover your airfare to and from your grant. Any travel in between, we would not cover. But please check the award benefits tab on the award in question. And if anything is unclear, you can reach out to the email address listed in the award description for clarification. And then, does Fulbright help with the visa process? So that is something that if you're selected for a grant, the U.S. Embassy or Fulbright Commission will be more responsible for the visa process than the Institute of International Education. But yes, they do provide guidance on visas. And then, does it provide research funds? That, again, will depend on which award you apply to. Some will, some won't. I'm seeing a couple of questions here that are like, what is a STEM opportunity in this country? What is a STEM opportunity in that country? And for those, I would recommend please go to the catalog of awards. There are 460 awards in there, so I don't know all of them off the top of my head. Also, some questions, specific questions about language requirements for particular countries. That, again, I would guide you to the catalog of awards. There will be more detail there about what kinds of language abilities are related. And then you didn't address this particular country. Does that mean they don't have any STEM opportunities? No, that I was only highlighting a couple. Like I said, there are 460 awards in our catalog. I couldn't highlight all of them today. There are STEM opportunities in many, many, many other countries besides the ones that I listed today. Let's see. I am gathering information to apply in about a year or two. Is there a lot of variation in the calls for application types from year to year? That's a good question. So I would say that about 85% of the catalog stays the same from year to year. We have some awards that, they disappear one year and they're replaced with something else. So I can't really guarantee that, if there's a specific STEM award in your field, that it will guaranteed be available next year or the year afterwards. But with the All Disciplines Awards, those usually stay the same from year to year. So if you're interested in going to Burkina Faso, there will likely be opportunities to go to Burkina Faso in upcoming years. But unfortunately, can't make any guarantees. Sometimes there are other tweaks with, relation to the grant length or the priority disciplines for a country. Sometimes they'll change that up from year to year as well. Okay, so if a country has interest in either teaching or research, would it be possible to do both? So if you're interested in doing a combination of teaching and research, then you would need to look for awards that have teaching/research listed in the activities part of the award description, and you can actually search the catalog by opportunities that are interested in a combination of both. But if it doesn't say teaching/research under the activities part of the award description, then it would mean that they don't accept both, that you would need to do one or the other. Okay. Okay, so some questions about where are the places in the world that have higher acceptance rates? I can't really speak to that specifically, although it looks like, I'm looking at your discipline, Marianne, you should email me, and I have a couple of ideas for you with nursing. But generally speaking, you know, countries where there's a lot of tourists that go, like a lot of travel to that country, or where there are a lot of universities, tend to be more competitive. Western Europe tends to be more competitive than Sub-Saharan Africa, for example. So I think, you know, if you use your common sense, you can probably guess where are some of our more competitive countries. But that said, it really depends on what the call is for and the award. If there's a, you know, particular like nursing award in a really competitive country, if you're a nurse, you're still going to be really competitive for that award because we may not have a lot of people within that specific discipline apply. So it really depends. But Marianne, for nursing, I would highly recommend looking at Jordan. Nursing is a big priority in Jordan and other countries as well. So if you're interested more in nursing, just reach out to me and I can let you know where some of those opportunities would be. What is the role or responsibility of the host? So the host institution is, there's no financial requirement, with the exception of very few awards where there's a financial contribution requirement. But for the most part, I'd say 99% of the catalog, the host institution does not have any financial requirements. That we would just ask that they, you know, that they incorporate you into their campus in whatever way, you know, whatever that looks like. Some institutions will offer an office on campus, access to resources on campus, their labs, their libraries, their archives, and things like that. But that's a conversation that you should be having with your host institution about what kinds of resources they're willing to contribute. And that's something they would want to talk about in their letter of invitation if there are some additional things that they're willing to provide you. But we don't require that they provide anything other than this letter of invitation, which says that they are happy to have you on their campus and that they, you know, will provide resources to you, whatever they list in that particular letter of invitation. If we submit an application 1 year and the project is not accepted, will we receive comments on how to make an application stronger for submission in a subsequent year? The reviewer comments at the peer review stage are confidential, so we cannot provide those to you. And then the review comments from the in-country part of the review, we do not even have access to, so we cannot provide you with specific reasons why your grant was not selected, why your project was not selected. That said, we do have general tips on how to submit a stronger application, and you can email us and you know, we're happy to make some general recommendations, but in terms of reading through your entire application and providing like notes, we do not offer that. I would recommend that for any of you that are interested, I think you should definitely utilize the Fulbright Scholar Liaison Network. Most campuses do have a Fulbright Scholar Liaison who is trained by us to provide feedback on Fulbright applications and sort of help you along in the application process. If you go onto our website, you can search our Scholar Liaison directory to see if there is a Scholar Liaison on your campus. And that would be a really great person to go to, particularly, you know, now when you're putting together your application, and they can give you tips and pointers on how to strengthen your application as well. Okay. Can one be hosted by two institutions in one country? So it depends on the award. Generally speaking, you would have one host in the country that you're going to, and you would only be uploading one letter of invitation. So unless it's otherwise noted in the award description, or if you email us and you sort of clear it with us beforehand, you should really only be partnering with one institution in the country. But there are, of course, exceptions depending on which award you apply to. Okay. Would you consider applications to institutions not currently listed or offered through the country in the catalog? So what we can always do, if you are interested in an institution that is not listed in the award description and it's not a specific partnered award, for example, our University of Newcastle award has to be at University of Newcastle. We can't send you somewhere else for that award. But if it's an all disciplines award and you see universities listed and the one that you're interested in is not there, then what you would just need to do is email us and we will let you know. The program officers, we have relationships with the embassies and Fulbright commissions abroad. And so for some countries in my region, for example, in the Palestinian territories, there's no flexibility around it. The institutions that are listed in the award description are the institutions that are available, and they're not adding any to that list. With other countries, sometimes, you know, maybe they overlooked it or they're willing to consider it. So you should email us and ask. Okay. How do we email you? If you email scholars@iie.org, if you just mention that I asked you to email me, the person that monitors that inbox will just forward it to me. So, and would I be willing to share these slides? Yes, they are going to be posted alongside the recording next week. So if you're interested in going through these again, they will be available. Okay, I'm just going to do one last scan through your questions. So I think I got to most of these. I think I answered most of these, and we are over time, so I am going to conclude the webinar for today. But if I wasn't able to get to your question, again, just email scholars@iie.org, and me or another program officer at IIE would be happy to answer the rest of your questions. But I really do recommend that everyone go to our catalog of awards, awards.cies.org, and spend some time exploring and really reading through the award descriptions, because the answers to most of your questions you will be able to find within the award descriptions. So like I said, I'll be archiving this webinar in the next couple of days. If you're interested in listening to the full presentation or even sharing it with your colleagues, it will be available to you. On behalf of IIE, I really want to thank you for taking the time to attend this webinar, and we look forward to assisting you with your application. Thank you, everyone.